The way they pick TV shows is they make one show. That show's called a pilot. Then they show that one show to the people who pick shows. And on the strength of that one show, they decide if they want to make more shows. Some get chosen and become television programs. Some don't, become nothing.
Welcome to a special bonus episode of Drop the Pilot, the podcast that's usually dedicated to TV pilots that became nothing. I'm Jimmy.
And I am Tisto. And today we are watching the pilot to Fringe. It aired on Fox in the US on September 9, 2008, and on Sky One in the UK on October 5 of the same year.
Exactly, yes. This podcast has done one of these before. But in case you have never listened to a commentary track before, we are watching the Blu-ray, and we both have it paused at 00000, all the zeros, and I'll count down 3, 2, 1, and say play, and on play, we'll all play the file, and we can all watch the pilot together, and I can't say together properly. Anyway, together, there we go. So, 3, 2, 1, play.
Airplane.
There's a plane in the sky.
I feel like there was another show that started this way, but I don't recall what one it was.
What, with a plane in the sky?
Trouble in the sky and a flight.
Right. If you're referring to Lost, and Lost didn't actually start that way.
I don't remember. Yeah. I have watched the first two episodes of Lost, but There's certainly a lot of DNA shared between that and Fringe and X-Files and some other stuff.
Oh, absolutely. Right? Lost starts with them actually on the island. And then you get flashbacks to the plane crashing.
Hmm.
So this is actually changing up for a J.J. Abrams show. I can imagine that people watching this when it originally aired were thinking, oh, it's just another Lost, I'm not going to bother with this. And then a man's jaw falls off, which never happened in Lost, as far as I recall.
Well, there's a lot, we don't get into it yet in this one, but there's a lot of time travel stuff and wacky, you know, alternate realities and mm-hmm. all of that. We won't get into that in this commentary, but we don't want to spoil it. I mean, maybe our listeners want to go and watch the show.
Yeah. Yeah. I may spoil a couple of little tiny things, but nothing major. I wouldn't say how the show ends or anything.
I don't think I could describe how the show ends. It is.
I can't remember.
Well, I had to look it up because I was like, let's see, what else was going on in this? And it was like, oh, that's right, there's Observers? Oh, yeah, Mr. September? And like, oh, God, jeez, I forgot all about that.
He appears in this episode, September.
He's got to be here somewhere, but I couldn't find him.
He is. I'll point him out to you.
Is he the man who's losing his face right now?
No.
Okay.
No, it's not. The Observers just appear in every single episode, basically. In the first season anyway, just to sort of set something up. And they're just in the background, and they did a fancy thing with like Fox events and stuff. You would see the actor who played September, you would see him in the background and stuff like that as well, just to drum up interest in the... Oh, here's a jaw about to fall off.
Yeah. The special effects do hold up, I would say.
Yeah. That is really freaky, though. Just that plane in the air, and we know that hell is happening inside the plane, but you wouldn't know it, obviously, because it's, you know, just flying in the air. And how does the plane land?
It has, they mention that it has a special prototype system that allows it to land automatically.
Of course it does. A prototype system that only this plane has for the purposes of plot.
Yeah, I think it's real, though, is the thing.
Yeah.
I believe it is real.
Probably is, yeah.
But I don't think it's all that common still today?
No, I don't know. I don't usually fly much. I've been in a plane technically twice in my life. Once to get somewhere and once to get back.
That's here we introduce our lead, female lead.
Yeah, and who we are supposed to think is the male lead.
Right, I was fooled. I told my sister when my sister recommended this show, and I watched the half of the first episode, and I said to her, I'm only halfway through the first episode, but it looks very exciting, and the guy hasn't come out of it yet, but I'm sure he's going to. It's going to be, of course, he's obviously going to. And she kind of shut up and went, okay.
Yeah, you're supposed to think that this is just like a case of the week type thing, and this is how we're introducing them and to show that she really cares for them and stuff, and but no.
it worked out really well because, you know, they do save him, and then there's the big twist at the end in which he turns out to be a bad guy involved in all this stuff, and it's like, whoa, wow, that is sharp writing. We should talk about the writers.
Yeah.
This is created by J.J. Abrams, and I have things to say about that. But it was written, this episode, I think, was written by Alex Kurtzman and Roberto Orci. And they were co-creators as well. Mm-hmm. They have a bunch of credits to their name. They worked on all kinds of things like Sleepy Hollow and Alias and Xena Warrior Princess and those on television credits, but also stuff like Watchmen and...
I like the signs, the big signs that are just we're going to go through.
I'm not. We're going I still haven't decided whether or not I like that or not. But
that's actually a homage to Panic Room.
Oh, is it really? The okay.
Adventure movie. Yeah. J.J. Abrams has said that he really liked that, so he stole it.
Yeah.
I like.
So they've just done a bunch of movies together. The two of them.
Yeah. Those two gentlemen that you mentioned, I think they wrote the Star Trek movies for J.J. Abrams.
Right. So, I think they worked with him first on Mission Impossible 3, if I have that correct.
Probably. Yeah, they've written a lot of stuff. And it was directed by Alex Graves.
Yeah?
Yeah. Who's directed... I'm going to say he's directed episodes of Lost. That's why that's why he's done this. He's directed for Game of Thrones, Altered Carbon for Netflix... I don't think he has actually directed Lost, so I was talking rubbish.
Ah.
Directed episodes of Sports Night and The Practice, so there you go.
This actor, I don't know his name, but he does a good job. He's, you know, carries through the whole series, and he has a couple of different roles.
Yeah.
But I never really got to love him.
No, I don't like this character, Charlie.
Charlie, that's right, yeah.
I don't like him at all. I was never a fan of Charlie. He was the he was the character who just did not believe anything. Sorry, that's a slight spoiler, but Charlie's a skeptic, and he's not really given enough. He's not given enough sort of character to be like the Scully type, and he's not really given enough screen time for that sort of thing either. He's just a skeptic, and that's it.
We're introducing Lance Reddick as the boss. He does a fine job. He's awfully mean in this first episode, but oh well.
Yeah, that voice is fantastic, though, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He was in Lost.
Oh, was he? Okay.
Yeah, he appears in some episodes of Lost as a guest star.
So we don't know it, but there's some background here where Lance Reddick is part of this team that's secretly investigating the fringe, what they call the pattern. Now, don't ask me why they call it the pattern, but the show is called Fringe. I don't know.
Yeah.
Why isn't it called the pattern? He brings her into the fold by the end of the episode, saying, "You know, you actually did some good job for a woman." He doesn't say that, but that's the implication.
It's, I mean, Can we just say just how well shot this is, though, as well? For a TV pilot, it looks bloody good as well.
It looks fantastic. I noticed in looking for September that there are an awful lot of close-ups. We're really close on characters a lot of times. And
I can tell you where September is right now if you want.
Oh, okay.
See when we go to they go to meet. Oh, what's her name?
Oh, right,
Nina
Blair
Sharp.
Brown.
Yeah. They're outside her workplace. I can't remember the name of it. The Dynamics place.
Massive Dynamics.
Yeah. He's walking past there when we see the. We see the shot of the building from the outside.
Okay.
But you don't notice him because we see the big sign. It says Massive Dynamics in front of it. It's that, like, the big signs that they do, but we saw at the beginning there, the one that we passed through. There's one of those big signs, so that sort of distracts you from the fact that September's walking past. And since it's a pilot, you wouldn't really know anyway. You wouldn't know to look out for the bald men. So.
Right. I remember that now that you say it, because I'm sure I looked it up at the time when he became important. Like, oh, I'm going to go back and see where he was in the first episode. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he's every single episode of this first season, at least. I can't remember how it goes, so... So, that's not a spoiler. That's just me just guessing.
Well, so, let's talk about that. So... J.J. Abrams did a TED talk on the topic of the mystery box.
Uh-huh.
And he talked about how he loved mysteries. I think it was a thing that he sent away for in a back of a comic book that, you know, it didn't tell you what you were buying and it was just, you know, nonsense. But he loved the idea that there was a mystery inside there. And he did this with Lost as well. I think it was even worse, where he builds this mystery and he does not know the answer to the mystery. And he just hopes that the writers write something that sort of makes sense. But they end up, it's so complicated and crazy that they have to throw things away and leave loose ends. And in this show, I think it actually turned out to work. The writers actually made it make a decent amount of sense.
Well, that's the thing about J.J. Abrams.
Yeah.
Is that he starts shows and he does his mystery box thing, then he fucks off to do other things and leaves everyone else.
Yeah.
to deal with it. And it's quite shitty. But, you know, he's J.J. Abrams. He's, you know. People tend to accept it.
I mean, but, he became, I don't know, well, he must have been famous before Cloverfield, but that's when I remember him, because he did Mission Impossible 3 before that. But
well, he'd done Felicity and Alias by that point.
Oh, right, so. Yeah, the television stuff, that's right. But Alias, I think, was along the same lines, right? That had a bunch of complicated stuff that didn't make sense, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And the final season of Felicity involves time travel.
Oh my god, I was just going to make that joke. Are you serious? That's hilarious.
Yeah. Yep. The final season of Felicity involves time travel, yeah.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, so he's a crazy person, and he does not care if things make a lot of sense, and he needs to be stopped.
The thing about Lost is, though, and... the thing about Lost is that... Some people, sorry, I'm getting distracted by what's actually happening on the screen, like we're supposed to be talking about. But the thing about it, there's an old car.
MGB.
Yep. The thing about Lost is that people tend to think that things in Lost were never answered. There's a lot of people who complained that they just didn't get any answers in Lost. And
Like the smoke monster.
Yeah, but that's bollocks. That all gets explained.
Wait, really? The smoke monster gets explained?
Yeah.
Okay.
All of it. Well, most of it gets explained, but Smoke Monster gets explained. Of course it does, yeah.
Okay. I'll trust you on that.
Yeah. It's a good show. I do recommend you watch it. Just don't watch season 6. Just watch up to the end of season 5 when it's bloody good television. But then just ignore season 6.
So this is a weird moment because the two of them are alone together, but it turns out that they, well, maybe he doesn't, maybe they don't.
Yeah, they're on the same side.
Right.
We don't know that yet. That's a good shot. Above shot of the.
Yeah, that was a neat. Well, yeah, it was meant to look like a labyrinth of shipping containers.
Yeah, like a maze type thing, like the rats that we saw earlier. They're on the same side, but I don't think they actually know that they're on the same side, because why is he chasing him?
Yeah.
And then why is he about to blow him up?
So I think he wants to just kill. I think John Scott wants to kill this guy because he knows who he is, but I don't think the guy knows who John Scott is. I think he's only talked to him on the phone. That's my suspicion.
Okay. And there we've just essentially lost our male lead.
Right, yeah, he's just a special effect from here on out, more or less. There's a couple of scenes where he comes back at the end, but...
Yeah. A freaky sort of special effect as well, because he's all see-through. That's something I hadn't seen before, this show.
Ah, yeah, it was very, very X-Files-y and brilliant.
So did you actually finish this show?
Yeah, oh yeah, 5 seasons, yeah.
Yeah, same here. It's a good show. I say that I don't remember how it ends, but I do remember like a lot of the 5th season and just how sort of strange it got.
Right. You've got alternate realities, you've got time travel, you've got people that turn out to be different people than we thought they were. We've got, parts of brains that were missing and
it's
craziness.
Yeah, it's all very strange. Although if this is what J.J. Abrams started and then he pissed off to do something else, I don't know, probably working movies at this point. But in fact, he would have been working on the first Star Trek movie after this, I think. Anyway. He did this, but the 1st season isn't really that overly complicated.
Right, yeah, it's a lot of procedural stuff, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of this just isn't that manic, whereas it gets really batshit insane after J.J. Abrams leaves. So if that was them trying to do, like, sort of damage control, they sort of went the wrong way.
Well, that's a very good point, yeah, you're right. I mean, he lays in stuff like the... And to their credit, I mean, to his credit, the three of them created this together. It's not like like Abrams gave it to Kurtzman and Orsi, as far as we know.
Yeah.
So the three of them were kind of on board together of this idea of the watchers or observers or whatever. And the fact that there was an alternate reality and it was that I think the basic idea is that there's an alternate reality and the for some reason that I don't know if it's ever explained, the barrier between those two realities is breaking down, and the result of that is these fringe incidents that keep happening. And Walter is at the heart of it, and Massive Dynamics and what's his name, William Bell, yeah,
played by Leonard Nimoy.
Yeah, that was neat to see.
Yeah. He hasn't even been on screen yet, but can we sort of agree that Walter Bishop is one of the best television characters of all time?
Absolutely. I mean, he's the quintessential, there he is now, the quintessential mad scientist, right? I mean, they took the idea of mad scientist and they went, what if he's completely, absolutely bonkers?
Yeah. And it's glorious.
It is fantastic. It's John Noble, who I think most people would have maybe been introduced to in the Lord of the Rings movies.
Yeah.
As the Mad King Denethor.
Yeah, he's an Australian actor.
Yeah, and so is Anna Torv.
Yeah, no, that's true. Yeah, Anna Torv's Australian as well, yeah.
You want to talk about Joshua Jackson, since you've already done the...
Who appears.
That's true. Yeah, that's a good point.
Because I sort of lucked out there when we saw John Noble's pictures. His photographs appeared on screen, so I could talk about him. Kind of lucked out. Yeah, Lance Reddick is quite a... He's, I mean, more recently was in John Wick 3. He's in all three of the John Wick movies.
Oh.
So he's, you know, still going strong with that amazing voice. I'm assuming Lance Reddick is American. Because we've got two Australians and Joshua Jackson's Canadian, I think.
Yeah, Lance Reddick was born in Maryland, Baltimore, Maryland.
Yeah. So basically, this is. So he's been a bit of a dick to you.
Yeah, this is where we're assembling the band, right?
Okay,
well, we got to have this guy, and in order to get this guy, we have to get this other guy, so she's going to go on.
I love that. Look, we're underneath the bee. Come on, man. Yeah,
that's kind of gimmicky, though.
I love it, though. I love it. It is gimmicky. I know it shouldn't be there. It shouldn't exist. But it's a science fiction show, so... That's only there for our benefit.
Yeah, I think they change it later on, right? Because it looks kind of cheesy. It looks...
They get better with it, yeah.
Yeah, it improves.
Here's Pacey from Dawson's Creek.
Yeah, that's him. I never saw a single episode of that show, so this was my introduction to him.
Right. Did you never see the Mighty Ducks movies?
I also never saw the Mighty Ducks.
Yeah, he was in the Mighty Ducks, and then Dawson's, and then this.
He was apparently cast at the last minute,
mm-hmm.
and I think he does a good job, but I don't think it's a definitive job. All the other characters, I would say, those actors, I can't imagine any other actor playing them, but him was like, I could see somebody else playing that guy.
Well, see this character that he plays here. In Dawson's Creek, he plays sort of like the cocky, wisecracking teenager. And here he's playing as like the cocky, wisecracking adult. But now he's smart. he's got a high IQ. This is if Pacey from Dawson's Creek was incredibly smart. He wasn't like the dumb character in Dawson's Creek, but he wasn't the smartest. But it's basically the same. It's Pacey grown up and with a higher IQ.
Yeah, I like the fact that the character is very likable. I like the fact that the character is able to talk to Walter both as a son and as a scientist.
Yeah.
And he's able to translate for us sometimes, right?
Yeah, because he knows his stuff too, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And he's able to work on his own sometimes too. It would be tempting sometimes to write this character just as an appendage that is an enabler, you know, but he works really well as a character on his own.
Yeah.
I don't get her showing up here dressed in like a t-shirt. You know, this is a weird outfit for her.
Shouldn't she be sort of wearing more appropriate attire in Iraq?
Yeah. I mean, she should be dressed in a suit for one thing. But I mean, she's in a country where, you know, they don't take kindly to women with bare skin. And it's an odd choice.
To be fair, she did just get off the helicopter straight into the hotel, and then she's just going to leave again. So she's only there briefly.
Yeah. Oh, she's gotten rid of her little band-aid on her forehead, too. She had the the cartoon band-aid on her forehead after getting blown up. I mentioned the close-ups. We got a lot of close-ups there. The high-definition close-ups, not very kind to her skin. She has a little bit of an acne problem, and I think today they would just go in and
I think they're more freckles.
Erase that.
I think they're freckles she has.
Well, around her mouth, if you watch, she has some acne that's covered up. But yeah, I love I don't have any problem with the freckles, yeah.
Yeah, I love freckles. I never really noticed. I never really looked around the mouth, but yeah, HD can bring that out. It looks quite bad. Like, I was watching, like, HD episodes of Doctor Who, and the episodes with Karen Gillan in them.
Oh, yeah, yep.
And Karen Gillan was about 20 when she started, and she was still sort of, she still had like acne, and you could see it in the high, the like HD shots. And it's not very flattering.
Yep.
I mean,
I think today they would just erase that.
Sort of thing. Yeah, exactly. We're only human. We can't help that sort of bloody thing. But then you don't really want to advertise like showing up on TV and HD. Yeah, okay, I see it now.
An area called fringe science. You mean pseudoscience. So immediately you get the yeah, you get the scholar moldy dynamic.
Although
squirrel and moose.
He does believe, at least he believes in enough, and it doesn't take him as long as it takes
Charlie and those guys?
Yeah, or even Scully in X-Files, who doesn't believe in anything till about season 6. At least these two, she's just getting introduced to it as well. So at least these two sort of believe it straight away. Whereas Scully takes an awful long time. She's still a skeptic by the first movie, I think. Which is ridiculous. They had to come up with some really convoluted ways to try and make Scully still seem like a skeptic after every single thing that she sees.
Yeah, they had to go out of their way to make sure that she didn't see certain things that Mulder saw, and it became a little silly.
Yeah, even at the end of the last movie, he saves her from inside a spaceship.
Right, yes.
And then she's unconscious, and the spaceship comes out the ground and flies away. Then she wakes up and doesn't see
him. That was the worst, yes. But you're right, yeah, I mean, Peter, he knows a lot of this stuff, but he says there, you know, you mean my father was Dr. Frankenstein? And then immediately, as soon as we actually get into it, it's like, how would he not know his father was Dr. Frankenstein? That clearly they're both very well versed in some crazy science.
Yeah. When this first got announced, they did the usual, like, sort of showing clips of it during pilot season and stuff that they usually do. And I watched it because, well, I like science fiction, but also because Joshua Jackson was in it, because I like Dawson's Creek. So I watched it for him. I wanted to see him do something different from that show. And it looked like it was going to be that. But then the clips that they showed, it was quite strange. It was like, it was shots of Olivia talking to Walter Bishop. And then there'd be the occasional sort of interruption by Peter Bishop, but nobody really spoke to Peter Bishop in the clips, in those clips.
Oh, yeah.
So I wondered whether or not Peter Bishop was actually there, or if he was a figment of Olivia's imagination, because only she would actually like acknowledge him, but Walter didn't in those clips. And I was like, oh, is he going to be like, is it going to turn out that he's not actually there? But no, obviously not.
Yeah, that's an interesting idea.
Yeah.
I don't like it when they do that, but yeah, I can see how you would come to that conclusion based on the way they interact.
I would have thought that was crap, but yeah.
It's so funny. They hadn't quite figured out high definition at this point, and they're very close on John Noble, and you can see the mesh of his fake mustache at a couple of points and stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, absolutely. Yeah, you can see that it's fake. Yeah.
I don't know if some of that was intentional, because you know that was kind of the treat that you got from high definition in the early days.
I don't know. Was this actually filmed in high definition? It probably would have been by that point, yeah?
Well, I don't know if it was filmed on high-definition video. I think it was, but it might have been filmed on 35mm film. I don't know that fact, but it was...
But, I mean, like, filmed at least with the intention to be shown on HD TVs, whereas a lot of stuff that you get from, say, like, Buffy wasn't filmed to be shown on HD TV because it wasn't really a thing back then. So if you watch HD Buffy now, it's atrocious.
Right. But no, this is widescreen. It was filmed for HD. However, it is Fox, and Fox was doing 720p for a while.
Right, okay.
For a few years, so it's probably... It might only be 720p.
So we've got some antagonistic behavior between the two of them here, because he keeps calling her sweetheart, and she doesn't like it.
Yeah, that kind of... rings hollow, yeah.
It does, because especially from what we learn of Peter later on, that's not really like him. This is just one of those pilots, obviously, where they're not 100% sure what to do with the characters yet, or how the characters are going to speak. He's not really like that the rest of the series.
Right. I think, and part of that always is that the writers have to see the actor, mm-hmm. and they see how the actor portrays the character, and then they start writing for the actor more, and the character gels then. So yeah, a lot of shows are that way. That first episode, you kind of go, what's going on?
Yeah, they definitely need to. A lot of shows, the characters improve over the first few episodes. That's why I always think you should give a show a chance of at least 3 or 4 episodes, maybe, instead of just watching a pilot.
Oh, I agree, yeah. John Noble, on the other hand, I think they nailed that character right from the beginning.
Yeah.
That seems to be, you know, well, and Atorv as well. I think that she got it, or they got her, or they, it's just a better fit of actor and character.
Yeah, but to be, but Olivia's not a great character, though.
I agree, yes.
She's not really extremely well written.
It's funny when we see Folivia, who has the red hair from the mm-hmm. Ultimate Reality, she's a better character. And it's like, wow, I love that character. Make a show about her.
Yeah, and she's better performed as well. Anna Torv is much better as Folivia.
Yeah.
I'm not saying she's a bad actress, because clearly she isn't. But she's not given a lot to do here apart from be the... Oh no, my boyfriend's in danger. Please help.
Right. Sort of thing. Yes. Yeah. I think it would have been interesting if she discovered that he had betrayed her all along, like earlier, because then she'd be a more complicated character. She'd be dealing with multiple emotions, right?
But then she wouldn't really have the drive to help him, though.
Well, I think she wants answers, regardless.
Think that she would want to still heal him to find out what he knows.
Right, yeah. I mean, she wants to give him a chance to explain himself or whatever, you know?
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
She's not going to stop loving him immediately.
No, I know, but he's also like a traitor to his country, so...
Well, but, I mean, you can lie to yourself. You can lie to yourself pretty good for a while.
Yeah.
When you're, you know, that person is in a coma.
Yeah. I'm assuming the government and that would, if they knew straight away, they'd probably want to help him out so they could get information from him.
I think a show like this, if you really planned it out, it could be amazing, because you could have some pretty crazy things happen and unexplained things that actually do make sense later on if you actually tightly plotted it for the... You know, not you don't have to have it from beginning to end, but you've got the overall arc clear in your head, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't do that. I don't know that other... I can't think of another show where that happens either.
Yeah. Can't really think of another show where one of the leads pisses himself in the back of a car either, which is just what happened here.
It is a little rare, yeah.
Yeah. Charlie's not a great character, I don't think. But, you know, it's not the actor's fault. I've seen him in other things, He was more recently in a couple of seasons of Arrow. I don't know if he's still in that show, and I stopped watching it. But he was a bad guy in Arrow for a while.
He's a bit like Felix Leiter in the James Bond movies. He's a bit like all those other, like the secondary detectives in every detective show. They're like, they're working another case, and but sometimes we need other guys, you know, to be involved. And they always seem kind of bland, and they don't have much to do or say.
No.
Here we get the beauty shot of this.
They have to go all the way up and obviously hide his penis, but they have to go all the way up. just to show this special effect that they've done. And it looks all right. It looks quite good, actually, for 2008 TV.
But they've got him on this, like, blue liquid mattress or something. But they also have this, like, little blue mattress, blue liquid thing just over his groin. I hadn't thought about that, but you're right. Like, what could that possibly be? We got to keep his groin cool. It's vital to keep his groin cool.
Yeah. And of course, we've just been introduced to Astrid.
Yes, sort of.
Well, she's standing right there, but we haven't really heard anything from her.
Right.
But she's in the room.
She's a great character. I liked her a lot. I wanted her to do more, and then it kind of didn't really give her much to do.
Astrid is a likable sort of character, but she's more like a cameo every episode. She doesn't really do anything. But I think she's one of the main cast. She's in it until the end, anyway. She's in it all the way through the season.
Yeah. I mean, the problem is that she's a running joke at first because she's mainly there so that Walter can forget her name.
Yeah, he mispronounces her name constantly. He says the wrong name all the time.
There's some gross stuff in this show.
There really is. That's what we're just finding out, that his lab is no longer.
Yeah, they say that your lab's gone. It's used for storage now, but it's actually pretty much exactly as he left it, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, it's still there. They go back to it, and it's still there. They just move a couple of things.
Yeah,
and then it's all back to normal for them. As though that it's that difficult. They make it out as though that it's like covered in boxes and you can't move an inch, but no, it's still perfectly fine.
It's just full of sports equipment. But then we see it and we go, no, literally all the tables and chairs are all in the same place.
Yeah. It's now a gym, but no, it's not. It's still perfectly fine. Yeah, so another, the boss is not happy with Olivia scene.
There is a bit of the angry black police captain in the Lance Reddick character, unfortunately.
That absolutely is.
Yeah, I mean, it goes back to, 48 Hours
Beverly Hills Cop.
Beverly Hills Cop, yeah, that's the one I was thinking of.
There's a lab, it's perfectly fine.
Yeah, I mean, they've just covered the equipment in sheets.
Yeah. I don't think Astrid has said a single word, and this is her second scene she's been in.
Yeah, that's true.
But she's part of the team now. This is Astrid being introduced as part of the team, because she's in it for the long haul, but she doesn't say a word. Poor Astrid. And these glyphs that happened every single time there was a commercial break. There's the hand with the five fingers.
They're like a frog with a symbol on it and various other things.
Those
are great. I love those.
A butterfly that is made out of human bones. Can't remember the others. A leaf, but I can't remember what's the deal with the leaf. But, anyway. Yeah, it's all just covered in sheets. There's nothing wrong with it. Your lab was shut down. It's now used for storage. Okay. He wants a cow.
Yeah, the cow Jean becomes a character of her own, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, you say character, it's more like a running gag.
Well, yeah, exactly. It's not very practical to have a cow. I mean, they say, like, cows' genes are very similar to humans, but it's not very practical to have a cow in a laboratory.
No, it's not. I don't understand it, but there you go.
Because Astrid is going to have to clean up after the cow.
Yeah, you know that's... But you just saw Astrid's face there. It's like, you know I'm going to have to clean that up. That's going to be my fucking job. That's ridiculous.
The farmer brings in the cow.
Oh, that's gross. The pictures of the people in the plane, and they're all sort of melted, but their bones are still there. It's all very nasty. And this aired on network television as well. I was quite surprised by how much they get away with in this show to begin with.
Yeah, I think that X-Files kind of paved that path. And people got used to the idea, and I don't know. I don't think there was ever any problem with how gross the show got.
No. But I wasn't a huge X-Files watcher, but I knew that it did sort of get gross on occasion. There was a shot there of Olivia, and it was very grainy. It was wasn't a very good sort of HD shot. So
I think that those early HD cameras had poor low light level performance. So whenever you do, in a show like this, you want to get into, you know, low light level shots a lot of times to make them, you know, evocative noir kind of things. And they just didn't perform very well. They're a lot better nowadays, of course.
So this is Peter just finding out that you get played. That there was no file on him, and Olivia just conned him just to get him back to America from Iraq.
Yeah, and she could tell that he was kind of shady, and so she played on that. Yeah,
yeah. But then he admits he got played, but then says that he's usually good at reading people because that's what he does. So just with that one line, that's just like telling us that Peter's sort of a con man as well, which is what he was doing in Iraq. He was kind of conning people.
Probably, yeah. Now, later on, we learn that Olivia was part of Walter's group of children who were tested on, and she has some mental powers.
Yeah. But
I don't think that was an attempt to suggest that she was using her mental powers to trick him, but
no.
That is one of her mental powers later on.
Yeah. But
that's the kind of thing that like I said, if you really had this plotted out and you really understood what the overall arc was, you could put that kind of thing in here, you know?
Yeah, but that thing about the mental powers, they could just retcon that and say that's exactly what they had planned. But obviously it wasn't.
Yeah, well, I don't know. It didn't play that way.
No.
The fact, you and I didn't go, ooh, here's the moment where she's using her powers, which we'll learn about later, but that... It was just, she just conned him as all.
Yeah. She was just better at reading people than he was.
Well, she read him in that situation, I guess.
Yeah, I mean.
Don't know. Is he a con man? Do we see that later on from him? I mean,
I think
he's kind of a cipher.
Yeah, I think the sort of implication is that's how he's making money. Is by going to people because he's such a brainy person and they can read people and... but yeah, I think that sort of thing stops once he goes to work.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. That's true of a lot of shows. What's the name of that? Warehouse 13 started off with the male and female characters meeting, and the male character was a ladies' man. And as soon as the two of them start working together, they just drop that completely.
Mm-hmm.
And there's always a vague implication that the two of them are going to get together, but then they start dating other people and then they just abandon that plot line and the show kind of fell apart and it just got really goofy and I just got sick of it.
Right. Warehouse 13 lost me when it had a really dramatic sort of horrible death for one of the characters, and then that character came back in the next season and was perfectly fine. And that's when I was like, no, I'm not watching that show anymore. They should have killed them and that was it. But yeah. Do you know what I'm referring to?
I don't remember which character you're talking about.
Okay. I don't want to spoil things.
Because they introduced extra characters, because they were trying to go for, like, we got to have some kind of a romance or something going on here. Let's have some more characters involved. And they ended up with five or six people running around. Like, I think it was six. And they never really generated much heat.
It was six off and on, I think, yeah. It was the two main ones, and then there was Claudia, brainy one.
And they also had a black girl who was like an assistant, didn't they? Ran the hotel or whatever.
Right, yeah, and then she didn't... Yeah, and she didn't amount to much either, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
All right, you got to get naked and take some LSD and get into a bathtub. Yes. How about that?
That sounds like a good Saturday night to me. Ugh, that's just so gross. You can see his brain. That is gross. And he still has his hair on his head.
It is a little strange. Yeah, you can see through his bones to see his brain. I'm not sure that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, Astrid just had a line. So.
Oh, that's right.
She just said, salt will make you float.
That's it. It's literally just an explanation of what she was doing. Like, why is that? Yeah.
That's it. That's all it is. It was just an exposition line.
I like how Olivia is now, you know, on board with the crazy science, and she doesn't want to tell Charlie what's going on exactly. It's like, well, we don't have time to wait. I gotta, you know, get it into my underwear and do this thing.
That's just like a J.J. Abrams thing of getting his lead female into her underwear. Happened in Alias. It must have happened in Felicity. It happened in Lost.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I'm sure.
Kate was always in her underwear the first few episodes of Lost, and then until the actress was like, I'm not fucking doing that anymore.
They even did that in the first episode of The X-Files. Scully comes running into Mulder's hotel room because she's been like bitten by a weird insect or something. And they never did that again.
Yeah. Yeah, they didn't sexualize Scully as much. Which is quite surprising.
Well, the writers kept writing her. I mean, I think the idea was that she was mousy, but the writers kept writing romance, so they kept dressing her sort of more and more attractively.
Yeah.
But she also got pregnant a couple of times, so they couldn't do that anymore.
Yeah.
So now they were shooting around a big belly.
Yeah, exactly. So now we have an attractive Australian woman in her underwear. So there's that.
It's treated pretty matter-of-factly. I mean, it's just...
Yeah, it's just...
Just fun thing.
He said you have to strip down your underwear, and that's exactly what she did. She was like, yeah, fine, whatever. And the way that she just takes off the robe is like, yeah, I'm in my underwear. Who cares?
I hope your guy is worth it is a weird thing to say to a woman in her underwear about to crawl into
it. It really is.
Tank. It's a weird line.
Peter is... I get glasses recently. Sorry, this is just going on a tangent. I get glasses recently, and I'm still not used to them, so I went to scratch my eye there and just hit the glass.
Yeah.
So you could probably hear that in the microphone, so... That's what the weird noise was. Anyway, Peter is written to be such a dick in this episode. He really is.
Here and there, yeah, a couple times.
Yeah, he is. I mean, it's mostly like against his father, which we don't know.
Yeah, he hasn't seen his crazy father in 17 years, and immediately he's like, oh, you know, straighten out and fly right, you crazy man.
Exactly. I like the upside down shots.
Yeah.
That's good. It's really freaky seeing someone upside down, but...
What it kind of is, I kind of like that about that dynamic between the two of them, because yeah. There's a certain caretaker, what do they call it? When you just get tired of taking care of someone who is a lot of trouble, mm-hmm. even though it's it may be a retarded child or some other, you know, invalid or something. Mm-hmm. It's just exhaustion from doing that, and you don't have patience with them anymore. And that's kind of what he's showing with Walter. Like, you would think that after 17 years, it wouldn't just start up again just like that, but that's that kind of dynamic.
Yeah.
He just doesn't take Walter's crap.
Oh, well, he certainly doesn't, no. And of course, oh, there's the cow in the background. as cow's cameo for this episode. So, of course, I don't want to give too much away, but you do find out that Peter's got good reason to hate his dad. Well, to hate Walter Bishop anyway.
Well, yeah, it's very complicated. People are not who they seem to be and stuff. Yes. I forget exactly which thing that you're referring to, but yeah.
I don't want to say anything. but don't want to spoil it. Although I did spoil Dawson's Creek, but that's Dawson's Creek when I was doing that content. That's not that much to spoil Dawson's Creek. If anyone, you know what, fuck it, I'm going to say it.
Okay.
just don't listen for the next 30 seconds, but this Peter is not actually this Peter.
Right.
This Peter is from an alternate dimension. Walter stole him from his doppelganger from another dimension.
Our Peter died. He was not supposed to. It was accidentally the fault of September, the Observer. And
yes.
So Walter went to the alternate dimension and stole alternate Peter. And,
yes. So this Peter's not our, this timeline's Peter. This universe's Peter. So there we go.
I don't think that should matter, though, especially to Peter, but oh well. Well, oh no, he actually knew, right? Because he was old enough to know that he was being kidnapped.
So does he know? I don't think he remembers, though. Doesn't he find out later on?
He doesn't remember, but I think he was old enough for it to form a, like, permanent scar.
Yeah. So that's, yeah. So he does have very good reason to dislike Walter Bishop.
Yeah. That's a good point. Yeah.
So now we have lens flares.
yeah.
There we go. Lens flares.
Yeah.
Galore.
Lens flares. Yeah. We're in perfect sync, by the way. That's great.
Yeah, that's good. Both watching the Blu-ray. It's excellent. Yeah. The J.J. Abrams School of Filmmaking put a lens flare on it.
Yeah, we're in a blue netherworld, like, salvage yard or something. And,
yeah. No, a graveyard.
Yeah, these scenes are not particularly imaginative. Yeah, we'll put her in a salvage yard in a graveyard in a bedroom. And okay,
well,
whatever.
it's hard mind. So what are they trying to say about Olivia?
Well, there's later on, like really late in the series, Peter and September have a conversation in what is definitely a bus shelter.
Yeah.
like they're waiting on a bus and they're having this very momentous conversation. And it's like, I'm sure that is a bus shelter.
Yep. Mark Valley, who plays John here, is actually credited as a regular. He's in the main cast.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And
well, he does show up in some flashbacks, I think, in the next few episodes.
Yeah, but then by the end of this season, he's no longer a regular and he doesn't come back. But yeah, he's a regular in the cast for some reason. So that's why people obviously thought, well, he's going to come back. They're going to fix him. He's going to be okay. It's going to be these two going off solving the crimes, and it's going to be Peter, Walter, and Astrid sometimes in the background doing the sciencey stuff. but nope.
Yeah, the thing to do, because I'm a terrible writer, the thing to do would be to have her go to the alternate dimension and he exists in the alternate dimension.
Yes.
And now she's already in a relationship with Peter, and now she is torn between him and alternate John Scott, because this alternate John Scott didn't betray her, you know?
Yeah.
But I don't think that happens, right? We never meet him in the alternate world.
No, no. After season one, because actually these two, Anna Torv and Martin Valley, actually get married filming this first season, and then their marriage lasted about a year, then they got divorced.
Ooh.
So Martin Valley didn't come back to Fringe for some reason. I don't know why.
Suddenly that makes much more sense. Oh, that's funny.
Yep, their marriage lasted a year. Here we go. She has Sinny's face.
Yeah, that's I don't know. I don't think I would remember his face well enough in order to like draw a picture.
Although that's the same guy that died in the plane. Isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I forget how that I forgot how it worked.
It's his twin brother.
Yeah, oh, is it? Right,
okay. Yeah. So we're using some magical software that is kind of out of date.
Yeah.
To put together a face.
I forgot the plot point that it was his twin brother that died in the plane. Just so they could use the actor again. Oh, that's really old technology. Oh my god. It was only, 11 years ago?
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah, things have really come a long way. Let's see. What would have been popular at that time? 2008? I guess we had Google and stuff by that time, so I guess the world wasn't all that different.
Yeah.
Richard Stieg. Reminded me of another actor, and I can't remember what actor it is now, and it's not very important, but I like that actor. I like his character.
Here's September just going to walk past just now. There he is.
Well, that's a cheat. Man, yeah. We didn't even get a good look at him. He's not like he's looking at the building or something.
No, he's just walking past. And that's what the first few episodes are like, just occasional. Obviously you're not supposed to think he's anything special. It's just a man in a hat walking past, but yeah, he becomes a quite important character.
Again,
Blair Brown.
Me being a bad writer, I would actually have him, you know, standing in the background of crowd shots, staring into the camera, have characters notice him and everything.
No, would you? Why? I think he's done perfectly well as it is just now.
Well, he's an observer. He should be observing the scene.
He is observing.
Right? Not just passing by with a briefcase and a hat.
But he knows that she's there.
But what is he doing? Where is he going?
He's leaving. He doesn't need to be there anymore. He has seen that she has went to where she needs to be, and now he can leave.
Okay, I guess so. Okay.
Because every episode, he's in the background when she's there. He's observing Olivia. So
the observers are never really explained very well. They're like scientists from the 27th century or something like
that.
Yeah. And it's like, well, why do they look like that? And why are they doing this stuff?
They're all bald white men. I don't know why. I think we've... she's got a robot arm.
This is a beautiful effect. Yeah, the robot arm. Yeah. Blair Brown, we should talk about her. She's a lovely actress.
Yeah, she's another character that gets sort of sidelined. She's the white red-headed Astrid.
We see her in the alternate world, though, right? She's important. She's important later
yeah,
on.
Yeah, right. Okay. We've already spoiled a big major thing, so fuck it. I'm going to spoil some more things. See, most of the characters in this show, they're all fucking dead by, like, season three or something. And then we get alternate versions of them. Because they all die, apart from Olivia and Walter don't die, and Astrid, but everyone else dies. Peter gets wiped from existence, but Charlie's gone, and she dies at some point. Blair Brown's character dies at some point, and Lance Reddick's character dies at some point.
Yeah.
It's just one of those shows where it's like something with Lost, you tend to, you have got a big cast of characters, right? And you're going to lose characters occasionally. And you do. You get some main cast members dying in like seasons 1 and 2 and 3, and that's just one of those things. But this show has a very small amount of characters in it, and they lose almost every single one of them. And now the cow is watching SpongeBob SquarePants.
You know, it reminds me a little bit of Rick and Morty, the way that Rick and Morty sometimes throw away characters, and because there's sort of infinite realities in Rick and Morty, so we can kill off a character, and then we can just find that character again in a different reality and pick up from there. And they take it to a sort of a comical extreme, of course.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, they literally ruin their entire existence, and they just start over again in another existence where those Rick and Morty accidentally killed themselves.
Mm-hmm. Look at that South Boston, and they're just running past the sign, and it's just hanging in the sky. I love it. I don't know why I like that so much. I just think it's just so, I don't know, maybe it probably is used far too much, but I still like
some, the times that I really dislike it is when it actually looks to me like it's actually part of a building or something.
Right. The Baghdad thing was a bit much, because you did see, we were under the B of the Baghdad. That was a bit much. I'll admit that. If it's just like when it says there, but it's South Boston, and they're just running past it, and nobody acknowledges it, then it's fine.
Oh man, I love a trapdoor. I love the fact that the rug had a string attached to it, so once he goes down, he can pull the string, and the rug goes back over the trapdoor. Oh, that's brilliant. I love that they thought that through.
What happens if the string breaks?
Well, you got to get a new string, but
yeah, but then you have to go back up and.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. I would. I personally would be way too lazy to to fix it that way.
Yeah, I've got a father-son moment in the back of the car here, and see, it's hinted that as well, that Peter does know that he's not Peter. Although I do think he does sort of find out, but he calls Walter.
Oh, that's a good point. Sure, yeah. Yeah.
He never calls him Dad. It's always Walter. So that's, if that is just like sort of there for our purposes, just like that's a clue for us to work out. Walter looks as though he was going to like passionately kiss Peter there when he said,
well, he was
son.
Expressing his love for
his
son.
Yeah, it looked a bit strange.
I agree. I love this moment. I love how they're sitting in the car, and then all the cops are inside, and then the bad guy comes out the side, and they're like, it's up to Peter to go, oh, yeah. There he is. Oh, God. And he's going to stop him. And it's like, oh, that's a great way to involve him.
It's up to the civilian. The civilian who is not a member of the FBI to chase the man, because the entire FBI are inside the building. Isn't it like a running gag as well that Walter has to stay in the car?
Sure, well, they're always
Walter to stay in the car. It's a running gag.
I'm not crazy about the way this is shot. This
no,
there's it's too frenetic. This running chasing scene.
It's too many cuts.
I also don't believe that these characters would do this leap. That's a freaking Superman leap.
Yeah.
Would you do that leap? I mean, across an alley, down a floor, onto
possibly in my youth.
Iron railing?
Possibly.
Possibly what?
In my youth, when I was younger, yeah. Oh, I was a crazy bastard when I was younger. Like, I would, like, jump out windows and stuff when I was younger. I was fearless back then.
Yeah, okay.
But now, as an overweight middle-aged man, not a chance.
I would stop at the edge and go, I don't know that that thing could hold me. Especially, I mean, think about how much. I mean, I'm gonna land. It's coming. Nah,
mate. I wouldn't even have got that fucking far. I wouldn't even have got to the top of the building. I still would have been at the car.
There are moments. There are moments that I have this fantasy of accomplishing something, and then I literally jog from the car across the street to a hardware store, and I go, there is no chance I can accomplish anything. Clearly, I have winded myself just getting across the street.
Yeah.
Oh, have you by chance seen a series called Travelers on, I think it's on Netflix?
I think I saw some of the episodes of the first season.
There's some aspects of this, that shot there when he was looking at the guy on the video and everything, sort of reminded me of that for a moment. But that's a really clever time travel episode. It's got Eric McCormick as the main character, and it's got a great cast. It's a lot of fun. It sort of lays in future events haunting the characters earlier on, and it doesn't overplay that, but... that's a great show along the same lines as this. It's not as gross. It doesn't have the weird pseudoscience.
Yeah. Right, but... It doesn't have one of the main characters threatening to contaminate the lead suspect.
They might do that, actually.
With stuff that they scraped off John Scott and then smack him with a mug.
The mug was a good touch. I'm not crazy about the torturing the suspect thing. That's like out of 24 and stuff like that. And it's like, man, that is bad mojo for our character to torture
people. That's showing you what Peter... This is probably something that Peter's had to do. This is something that Peter has, like, known. He's kind of like a jack of all trades, and he's a bit of a sort of a... Maybe not a con artist, but he's still sort of... You know, he has to do what he has to do to survive, and maybe he has had to do this before.
Well, and he may have been on the other side of it, too.
Yes, possibly. Many times, actually. Yeah. I think Peter's been beaten up a lot.
Yeah, quite possibly. That was one of the things I like about the Rockford Files, you know? That's a character who got beaten up from time to time, and I miss that about other shows. You don't see our character getting beaten up a lot.
No, you don't really, do you? The main character mostly getting... It happens in Lost a lot.
Oh, he does it, yeah?
Yeah. Main characters in that get beat up quite a lot, but yeah. Like a procedural or something you don't usually see. Like, I haven't seen the new Magnum. I don't know if
he gets beat up. Oh, nah, no thanks.
No. No. I'm not really... I don't. Rockford Files is going to be next. That they're going to bring the Rockford Files back.
Yeah, they're going to. Yeah,
and they're going to make Jim Rockford into some sort of fucking superhuman or something. He's going to be some tough guy who could deal with any situation. And that's,
I don't want to think about that.
And that's just not what the Rockford Files was.
This is a beautiful location. We saw the ceiling there and everything.
Yeah.
I guess this is at Harvard, but it's not the place to have a top secret conversation about fringe science, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
But this is that moment when he's like, you know, you did some pretty good work here for a lady cop. how about if you join me on this special task force where we investigate all kinds of crazy stuff like this all the time?
Yeah, but what I think is that this is Broyles. I don't think this is what actually Broyles is like, because he's not really like this for the rest of the series.
Right, yeah.
I think this is an audition for Olivia, and Broyles was just being really tough on her just to see how she could handle it.
Oh, maybe a little bit. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
Because the character's completely, not completely, he's still gruff, but he's not like a dick to her anymore. They become quite close, actually, if I recall.
Right, yes. Oh, sure. I think the question I would ask in her place is one of the fringe science phenomenon that we investigate, what the hell is going on with your eyes? Because Lance Reddick has these weird, like, yellow, bloodshot eyes that look like he has some sort of sickness.
Hold on. I don't see that.
They're, like, yellow. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Maybe off-white. There's another glyph with the apple with the two fetuses in the middle instead of seeds.
I don't know. Since I wasn't watching this week to week, I hope that people didn't try to read into those things because they are completely meaningless.
No, I think they actually do mean something.
Eventually they come back. They were used in the testing, I think, or something.
Yeah, right? They definitely come back in some form, but I don't think they started off as meaning anything. I think people just wanted them to mean something, so the writers just included them, I think.
Oh, yeah, that's probably what happened. You're right, yeah.
Oh, there's his penis covered up again.
But it's him. It's him for real, the actor.
Yeah.
He's awake! She calls him baby right away. Which
That's quite strange. That isn't really what we've seen of Olivia so far in this pilot, for her to use that sort of language, even if it is for the man that she loves.
Yeah, yeah. She didn't walk around in the salvage yard going, you know, John, baby?
Yeah.
Hey, baby, are you here?
Exactly. I mean, you laugh, but she didn't. It seems very strange that she says it here.
Yeah. This doctor is a great actor. Mm-hmm. It seems like he would show up again, but I don't think he ever shows up again. I like this character.
I recognize the actor.
He's got a great face.
Yeah. I've definitely seen him in other things.
This is exactly the kind of show where you could do that, too, where you could go, let's get that one actor back. He was an interesting guy. Let's have him. He'll be in the alternate world and he'll be a cop or something, you know? It would be this weird, freaky thing where it's like, have we seen that guy before?
Yeah. The actor is Peter Outerbridge, which is an amazing name. Outerbridge.
The guy that Olivia shacks up with in the faux Olivia shacks up with. Well, our Olivia ends up shacking up with him in the alternate world when she has to stay there. I don't think we ever see him before she goes to the alternate world, right?
They
didn't do anything like that, right? They didn't pre-introduce him in our world?
No.
As a homeless man or something?
I'm not 100% sure, but no.
That character didn't amount to much, as I recall, though.
I can't even remember who you're talking about. Hold on, I'll go back. Yeah, the guy that... I can't see.
He doesn't amount to much, that's why you don't remember him. But yeah, she shacks up with the guy in the alternate world.
But is he not like a main character for a while?
Yeah, for a while, yeah. But she leaves him for Peter.
Lincoln. Is that who we're talking about?
No, he's one of the cops in the... I can't remember. I don't remember now.
All right, so she doesn't shack up with him?
I don't think so. I think she has a non-cop boyfriend, and then she ends up with Peter in the alternate world or whatever.
Yeah.
Or no, wait a minute. Am I mixing it up? does faux Olivia come over to our world and she shacks up with Peter?
Oh, God, I don't know.
Oh, man.
It's been so long since I've seen all of this show. But I'll need to rewatch it. And
there we go.
There we're finding out that.
Yeah, shout out to all the cops who are supposed to be guarding people in hospitals. They are always terrible.
Yeah, always. Without an exception, they're always really bad at their job.
They're easy to distract. They end up getting, they believe any story. They let people in. They don't act, like, watch people who are in the room with the person.
Mm-hmm. Right. So John Scott just murdered Stieg, and he took the pillow away from his face. But then when Charlie goes in to check on him, the pillow is lying on top of his face. So John Scott just left it there and went away. He just left the pillow and the murder weapon.
It would seem suspicious, yeah, to hear that.
Well, now we have a car chase. Sorry.
Everything I've read about true crime about people being smothered with pillows is that it is incredibly hard to smother someone with a pillow.
Yeah.
Because they fight back really hard. And it takes a long time, way longer than you would think to actually smother someone.
It takes longer than is shown in movies and TV shows. Yes. Yeah. Not that I have any experience in smothering anyone with a pillow, of course.
Which is why I introduced it with my research into true crime.
Yes. Although I have had it done to me a few times, and I can tell you it does take... No, not really.
It's not something you enjoy.
No. No. I've had someone try to strangle me to death once. Twice.
Oh, goodness. That's hard. That's got to be the same way. Really, really hard. Much harder than people imagine.
Well, but I was a child at the time, so it was...
Oh, I see.
Someone bigger than me, so it was quite sort of terrifying.
It's the same way with stabbings. You know, the stabbings are always like, oh, it was a victim of a brutal stab. He was stabbed 29 times. That's because it takes 29 times to actually kill somebody, because it's really hard to kill somebody.
That's a good stunt. Was a car just...
That was a great stunt, yeah. Through the those barrels and the scaffolding or whatever, yeah. I, in a weird way, I really feel bad for John Scott, because he just came out of this horrific coma experience and had to murder somebody. Like, how would you like to wake up and go, okay, I gotta go murder that guy, like, right now. Before he talks. And then he got caught. He's got to feel terrible. Like, he hasn't eaten.
But he's trying to blame it on broils now.
Yeah, I don't quite get that. I didn't remember, like, how did that work out? Was that suspicious? Was Broyles the bad guy?
Yeah, he's not. But I don't know why. Because he's telling... He's telling Olivia, ask why Broyle sent you to the yard.
Yeah.
It's like, well, I don't know. I can't remember why, but Broyles isn't a bad guy. Anna Torv has lovely eyes.
Oh, yeah. And these are tough scenes, too. You got to give her credit. I mean, she's got to play, like, okay, you're the love of your life, who also betrayed you, has died in your arms. Like, okay,
no, she's doing really well here. She is.
Yeah. Just sit here on the back of an ambulance and cry for a while.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, that day player cop in the background is like, I gotta get my face in the window. I'll turn and look at the window again.
Yeah. And also, like, she does the wiping her nose with her hand thing, which a lot of people won't do because it makes them look ugly. That's true. A lot of actors won't do that sort of thing. They won't ugly cry, as they call it, because it makes them look too ugly.
Yeah.
But Anna Torv was well in there, wiping snot from her nose. Ah, here's useless Charlie again.
I like to think that it's the Australian in her
who,
you know, is going to go that extra mile, right?
Yeah. Australians are quite... You know, we don't give a shit about much. Australians. Yeah, you're not really helping with this here, Charlie. Just let her grieve.
She has not been in much else that we would have seen, although she is in the new Mindhunter series.
Yeah, for Netflix. Yeah, she's in a Netflix show just now. It's currently second season's coming up. I do like all the snow.
Oh, yeah, I love the snow, yeah.
Yeah, I do like that. I don't know if it's the first few episodes, at least, there's snow. Because of when they shot it. Although this would have been shot before episode two, so probably, I can't remember if there was any snow in episode two.
I'm always really annoyed when they shoot with fake snow. And it's like, if snow was that important to your story, find, you know, plan on having, you know, going to a place and shooting where there's real snow, dumbasses.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're shooting, this is shot in Canada.
Oh, yeah, okay.
It's set in Boston, but it's shot in Canada. Is Boston known for its snow? Does it snow a lot in Boston?
It's pretty snowy there, yeah, on the East Coast. It's New England.
Right, okay. I do like that these two just sort of come to an understanding towards this.
Yeah, yeah. She says, I'm not going to use false threats anymore because the threats are real. Like,
yeah.
You know, please help.
But I think these two sort of work well together as it goes on. I don't like the whole convoluted sort of, well, they want this stuff that it turns into. That sort of thing just pisses me off. You don't need that in every single show when there's a man and a woman.
It's a terrible mistake a lot of times because eventually the audience comes to feel that will they, won't they is the central conflict, and therefore when they do sleep together, you have resolved the central conflict, and now the story is over, and everything after that is superfluous, so people don't want to watch the show anymore, so you screw yourself.
But we spoke about it before, but moonlighting is...
Yes.
Made
well, that's
example of that.
Yeah.
Where they messed that up royally by getting them together, and then in the very last episode, the moonlighting is... They know that the show's been cancelled, so they run to get married to try and keep the viewers interested in the show again. He's been dead.
Yeah, he's only been dead for 5 hours, so question him.
Question
That's
him,
great.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a callback to the earlier episode, or the earlier conversation where Walter says that, you know,
there's Leaf.
Yeah. If he's only been dead for six hours, you know, you can still have a weird conversation with him.
Yeah.
And, then there's that great line from Joshua where he says, yeah, because that's when they're really dead. 6 hours, yeah.
Yeah.
But it turns out, yeah, that is the case, though.
Yeah.
He may be crazy, but he's crazy like a fox. There's a massive dynamic, you know, has a machine that can do whatever they need to talk to him.
Of course they do. Of course they do. Well, that's it's Bad Robot. Bad Robot. That's a show. That's the pilot done. And my Blu-ray is just going to go straight on to the second episode.
Much was mine. Boston, Massachusetts.
Yeah. But that's all we have time for. I'd like to thank Tisto for joining me to do this commentary. I do enjoy doing these.
It's enormously fun. Thank you very much.
It's a wee bonus episode. I might just watch the second episode of Fringe just now, actually.
I did.
And I'd like to thank you all for listening. I'll see you next time. Goodbye.
Okay, bye.